So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight President, staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and author, reluctantly, of a children's book, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say what's up.
What's up? That's what I'm back. I write for American Dad. I'm currently a big harvester. I would say a harvester of fruit lately. I'm reaping all of my rewards because I worked so hard as a gardener for so long. And for some reason, this time of year, shit's popping off. And I'm like, I'm getting all my citrus. I'm getting eggplants. I'm getting tomatoes in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
It's great.
Nice. It was 9 degrees where I am yesterday.
Oh, so wait, good for you. How on earth are you running when it's that cold?
With layers, dog.
Yeah, but how do you even get out of the house? I'm talking mentally and emotionally. How do you psych yourself up enough to be like, no, a run is a good idea in 9 degrees?
Well, as my dad always said with running, if I didn't, then I wouldn't.
I hate that.
I love it.
I hate that. Because now you have to do it.
I know. And one of the more practical ways that I get myself to do it is I make sure I get dressed for it well before I have to do it. Like if I know I'm going to run at 4:30, then a little bit before 4, whatever I can tie to the next time I have to get up to go to the bathroom or to get a seltzer, I'm going to also use that time to get changed into running clothes. Because then like, what am I going to do? Change out of my running clothes? No. Right. I'm dressed for running. You got to go. You did the hard part already.
No, that's not true.
That sucks. I hate that I'm like this. Thanks to Nutrafol for supporting Quick Question. Nutrafol is physician formulated to be 100% drug free. They use natural medical grade botanicals in consistently effective dosages. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code QQ to save $15 off your first month subscription.
Thanks to Truebill for supporting our podcast. From forgotten free trials to automatic renewals, when big companies keep charging you, Truebill is your secret weapon to save you money on subscriptions you don't need. Go right now, truebill.com/QQ. It could save you thousands a year.
Thank you to Shopify for supporting Quick Question. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself, that's right, I'm an entrepreneur now, baby, giving us the resources once reserved for big business. For a free 14-day trial and full access to Shopify's entire suite of features, go to shopify.com/QQ.
So it really puts into perspective my situation, though, and my plight, which is it gets to be nighttime. I've put my children to bed. I have the time that's my own at that point. I could watch Band of Brothers for the 14th time, or I could brave the 56-degree weather outside. Each time I'm like, the choice is obvious.
God, why? You're describing a lovely spring day.
I'm like, I would have to put on a long sleeve shirt to go run. That's crazy. It would be awful. The first part of the run would be cold and miserable, and the second part I'd be too hot for the shirt. Oh no, I'm gonna go watch Colonel Winters fucking, I can't even think of an episode of it. It's been so long. I should watch Band of Brothers. That's what I should be doing. Did you ever watch that show, Dan?
No, I didn't. No, I watched the first episode.
It's really good. You should watch the whole thing.
Okay.
It's really good in a way that makes me feel a little like a grandpa that I like it and how much I like it. Because I think this is a show geared to World War II buffs. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to associate as one of those. But yeah. I do really enjoy the movie a lot. Movie, the miniseries.
Yeah.
But that's not what I want to talk to you about.
Wait, no, it's not what I want to talk about either. I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, that I feel like my show comes up in conversation often on this show, the show that I write for. But I really, I think I take for granted sometimes just how everywhere your show is. And what an accomplishment that is, and how like everyone across the world knows what American Dad is. It's just a very funny show, And it's like a good anchor point for me. Anytime I've been traveling and I'm in a hotel, which is one of the only times that I will just like turn on the TV and see what's on, I can almost always find American Dad, and I just leave it on because usually it's on for like somewhere between 4 and 1,000 episodes. And it was like, oh, good. I'm just going to have this on in the hotel the entire time that I'm in this room. And I take for granted what an accomplishment that is. And congratulations to you. Your show is everywhere and beloved. And it's a rare thing. I'm not seeking it out because you're my buddy or anything. And I'm trying to think of like, what else does this fit the profile of in terms of I put on a TV somewhere strange and I find something familiar. It's like, it's American Dad and it's been The Office, Friends, and Seinfeld as far as like ubiquitous universal show that I could just like put on and enjoy.
That's very, very kind of you to say. And I feel like I deserve probably none of that praise because the show's been in syndication for so long. I've written
you,
myself.
You handled those the syndication deal though, right? You orchestrated that.
Well, yeah. most of those episodes, in the grand scheme of how big the show is, I had never touched. I had nothing to do with. And it was only in like recent years that I've joined. And as far as like episodes that are specifically mine, there are so few even in that regard that I think it's a great show. I think that I got to jump on basically a bandwagon, something that was doing very well and that I enjoyed. And I agree that it's like a good comfort comedy that it was built before I got there and I just get to live in it. And it's great.
Yeah, but you're being modest. You're there for a reason. You're not like just some guy who got lucky off the street. Well, and now you're part of this national, maybe, I don't know, global institution of a comedy program.
I do like being a part of it. It's that does feel really great. And thank you for saying so. I think that if as far as like when you're talking about comfort shows, before I realized, oh yeah, it's a difference between comfort comedies and comfort shows. Like Frasier is a comfort comedy for me, but comfort shows, I was like, we're in the company of like House Hunters in my estimation.
No.
Like I would know House Hunters will be on. A marathon of House Hunters will always be on. I can just sit down and have that show on forever and check in on it every
once
in a while.
I don't mean it's not fucking Top Chef or Impractical Jokers. I am sincerely putting in the category of Office and Seinfeld and Friends as like,
thank you,
important massive comedy shows that I'm glad exist. And also as far as like, I think everyone I know, certainly everyone I know in my life, knows American Dad. And I think everyone I follow on Twitter probably knows American Dad. It's I want to say everyone, but I don't know what global broadcast rights are for American Dad. But it seems like I could walk into any state in this country and people would know what American Dad is. They would be familiar with it. Even if they're not a diehard fan, everyone knows what it is. And I don't know what that must be like for you guys as people who work on it. Because like Last Week Tonight is a known show and Cracked was a big website, but I never felt like everyone, I could stop anyone on the street and say the name of it, of the site or the show, and they would know what it is. But they would for American Dad everywhere you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's fucking nuts. True.
I had to recalibrate the way that I would tell people what I did. Because when you worked at Cracked, the conversation went like this. What do you do? I work for a comedy website. What's the name of the comedy website? Cracked. Huh. Crackle? No, Cracked. Okay. Oh, okay. I think I read that magazine. Yes, you did. Yeah. You did. You read it in the 80s. I know exactly what you're talking about. But the way that it goes with American Dad, it always feels very condescending because people be like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I work in television. And they're like, oh, do you work for a show I would know? And I was like, a show called American Dad. And they're like, okay, a show called American Dad? Oh, what's that? I'm just trying to give you
right
now. Like, if you don't know what it is, that's fine.
But that's like, I've never had that in my life. And very few people in human history have had that where someone will ask, because the most common follow-up, if you say, like, I'm a writer, whether it's movies, TV, or books, whatever, or plays, I guess, and someone said, the most reasonable follow-up question is anything that I would know. And you could say yes to like anyone in the country who asked that follow-up question. I and most of the people in this industry and most of the people in the world, I guess we'll just focus on the industry. Most of us are just like, maybe if you're, you know, because most of us don't write for these like massive national successes that that hit every dang quadrant. Like I'm still like very timidly talking to people and was like, write for a TV show. Anything I'd heard of? Maybe it's like a political comedy late night. You've walked away. All right. Yeah, that's fine.
Trying to describe your show before you give the title, like prefacing it, like gearing up toward it is, that's very relatable. but yeah, there's, it is, there's a lot. I wouldn't say that there's any pressure associated with that, that you're like, we have to feed the millions. That, like, there are lots of different people from all quadrants of life who will watch this show. None of that is there, but it is nice. It is really nice to be a part of something that is sort of an institution in a way where people see it in marathons every single day.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dan. That made me feel great.
Oh, good.
I feel really good.
It's no secret that I've got thinning hair, and I'm not stoked about it. And I want something that works, but I also want something natural. Well, lucky for me and for you, I don't have to choose between the two, because this works and is natural. There's a holistic solution for men that promotes both healthier hair and whole body wellness without drugs or prescriptions. Did you know that there are 5 root causes of thinning hair? 6 if you count my ex-wife! I'm kidding, we're having fun here. Nutrafol is the hair supplement that goes beyond genetics to target stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, and environmental factors that may be impacting your hair. Nutrafol is clinically shown to improve hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage without compromise. 21 potent natural ingredients support sex drive, better sleep, and less stress. Oof, better sex drive. Sounds like that would have been good for you know who. I'm just messing around. In a clinical study, men showed progressive improvement in hair growth and thickness after 3 and 6 months. That'll teach her. We're having fun. Nutrafol is also trusted and recommended by more than 1,500 top doctors. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code QQ to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere, and it's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code QQ. I miss her so much.
Honestly, do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's because it's a business scam. Their whole business is predicated on you not backing out because you didn't realize in time that you would sign up for another year or another month or another quarter of your subscription. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. If you're suffering from way too many subscriptions, there is a way out. Even the ones that you've completely forgotten about. And you don't even have to talk to anyone. You just let Truebill do the dirty work for you and set you free. The average user saves $720 a year using Truebill. That is a lot of money. By law, most states don't have to disclose when subscriptions renew. So get a hold of your subscriptions with Truebill. So how does it work, you might be asking? Well, Truebill is a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or, and let's be honest, that you just forgot you signed up for. A lot of times you sign up for a free trial thinking, I'll get rid of this by the time I need to. And then they've got your credit card number. And then every single year, you're getting another message from IMDb when there's some premium account through it. And they're just like, look, you belong to premium IMDb. And you're like, I don't even know why, because IMDb is just, all I'm doing is looking up, trying to remember who Jessica Chastain is. And I don't even know what else I can possibly be doing here. Truebill can help you. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel on purpose, and Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts, and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions on tap. Truebill has over 2 million users, and help them save over $100 million combined. That's not individually. But someone like Matthew B., who says, in a matter of seconds, I saved $660 for the year on my DirecTV bill, saved $120 for the year on my SiriusXM bill, and saved $840 a year on my car insurance. Well, that's looking pretty good for him. Truebill helped save me money, and I think we all know what site it's helped me save money on. IMDb. Why do they have a premium subscription? I don't get it. Is it for agents? Is it for managers? It doesn't matter. It's out of my life now, thanks to Truebill. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/QQ. Go right now, Truebill.com/QQ. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/QQ. Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Okay.
How do I put this?
Can you explain fancy food to me? Let me try a different way. Can you tell me what the fuck is the deal with shaved truffle? Do you eat that?
No.
Okay. Have you ever had it?
Truffle? I've had truffle in various forms. Yeah.
I've had truffle oil before. Yeah. Have you just had let's say you go to a very fancy restaurant and you get some sort of dinner and they come to your table and they're like, and now we're going to shave a black truffle on top of your food in front of you. Isn't this marvelous?
No, I've never had that.
Okay. Have you had just shaved truffle on top of a fancy meal?
I think I have. I feel like I went to one fancy restaurant where French fries were tossed in shaved truffle and shaved Parmesan.
Okay. It's very common for French fries to appear in truffle oil.
Okay.
And truffle oil can take on a couple different forms. Like one is that it's synthetic and other ones they're actually putting real truffle in there. It's kind of like...
That was a very off-brand... dickish way of correcting me. I'm like, I think they were shaved truffle. Well, it's very common for it to be truffle oil. You don't want to live in a world where I've had shaved truffle, do you?
Well, I had shaved truffle for I think maybe the first time.
Okay.
I can't remember another moment. I went to a restaurant this past weekend, and it's a very fancy restaurant in Los Angeles.
Carl's Senior.
We got gift certificates from my work because my work is, and I don't think I could get any trouble for saying this, full of food snobs. Like, ooh. The conversation constantly turns towards restaurants in Los Angeles, and they all have their opinions about the very best ones. And every single time they talk about one of the best restaurants, I just think, well, this isn't for me. This is not, I don't understand this. I don't want this. If anybody wants to talk about Carl's Jr. or Senior, I'm here and I will do that with you. But I went to this nice restaurant because we got a gift certificate from work and got a meal that had shaved truffle on top. And I was like, cool, I've heard a lot about this. People are always very excited about it. It adds like another $40 to your meal. Let's see what we're working with. And I was like, this sucks. This just tastes like some mushroom to me.
Do you not like mushroom?
Mushroom's fine.
Huh.
I got no beef with mushroom, but it wasn't like, oh, I get it. I get why this stuff is so expensive. I get why people are, this is like the black gold of the woods or whatever. But it made no sense to me. And then I found that with the rest of the meal, I was feeling very much the same way where I was like, what is the, what elevated this? What is this what's so great about this? And I'm not getting that. I don't quite understand because this just, it's just some more food to me. It's me basically, let me give you some of the context. Like me walking through a museum without any idea of how to read a painting, like how to understand a painting and understand like the use of colors and the focus of the eyes. And I'm just like, Christ painting, Christ painting, Christ painting. Like these are all the same to me. So
was there just one guy back then?
When I'm going into a fancy restaurant, I'm like, salt, sugar. These are the things I'm tasting.
Yeah.
Like there have been moments where I've gone to a really, really nice restaurant and been like, I have never had anything like that. Or my mouth has never felt those textures together. And this is wonderful. Like Momofuku is one in Las Vegas that I was like, holy shit, this is the best meal I've ever had in my entire life. But on the whole, when I go to fancy restaurants, I'm always like, everyone else is like, they take the bite. I don't even think they have time to process it, honestly. It's like in a movie where somebody takes a bite and immediately their eyes close and their mouth opens and they go, oh, oh, oh.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we're not, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't understand fancy food, and I feel like I'm missing out because you are all orgasming across the table from me over this. It looks just like burned fish, frankly. Like, but anyway, I don't get it. I can't figure it out. And I was wondering if you knew, because you know food pretty well. You're a foodie. What it is about fancy food, and like, there's something that I'm just like colorblind in this world.
I don't know. For me personally, I'm trying to rack my brain to see if there's any time that the specificity of the food itself, like the rareness of the food, like truffles, where you can't get them everywhere. They're hard to come by, and that's what makes them expensive, and people think expensive means good. I'm trying to think if there's something where it's like, because it was this particular fancy food, it was better than other things. And I can't think of an example. I can think of examples where the way food was prepared was better. Like the clumsiest handling of this is like, you know the difference between supermarket sushi and sushi at Sugarfish, or
absolutely,
a better restaurant where it's like, oh, okay, if you're a sushi person, or even just like casually someone who's had sushi several times in their life, you know the first time you have very good sushi, it immediately puts in context what sushi can or is supposed to be. And before that, you could just say like, sushi is fine, I can eat sushi, growing up in the suburbs of New Jersey, thinking this is what sushi is supposed to taste like. And then I have really good sushi, I'm like, oh, okay, this is a new bar has been set, and the difference is the freshness of the ingredients and the way it was prepared. But the raw materials are mostly the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's like lobster's a pretty good example. Because I do think largely it's about preparation, but beyond that, it's about marketing, and it's fairly arbitrary. Like the fun fact about lobsters is, for the longest time, it was considered a poor person food because they were in such abundance and they looked disgusting. They looked like bugs.
The insect,
it was like,
of the sea,
yeah,
basically.
Poor people, you're gonna eat lobster. That's your thing. And then it was just sort of decided that lobster was a delicacy, and then it became expensive and then out of reach for a lot of people. But I've had a lot of lobster, and some of it's never good just because it's lobster.
Right.
Which I think you would agree with.
Yes, absolutely.
It's
the preparation. I understand like how preparation matters, but what I don't get is there's like a limit to how much prep you can do on a meal that it's going to taste exactly like the lower rank version of the meal. I'm trying to think of an example. Branzino. Do you know what branzino is?
I do. Okay.
Branzino is a fish.
Yeah.
That's served for our audience. Branzino is a fish that's usually served whole. So you're getting like the whole thing, and it's like kind of like a crisp skin on top. You're seeing the head, you're seeing the tail. It's a meal that can like, you can get a very, very expensive branzino, or you can get a very, very cheap branzino. If you gave me a taste test between the two, I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference between them. One might be maybe a little drier, but like there's also like a lot of lemon and sometimes like a lemon juice with it as well. That like that's going to hide a lot of that too. It's just, you're working with one fish. You're just cooking that one fish and then you're putting it on a plate. It's not a sauce, like a special sauce that goes with it or anything like that. There's only so much you can do. So why is one like, why is one $78 and one $20?
I have eaten a lot of fish. I've never had branzino. I have this strange mental hang up with branzino that I associate it with idiots trying to be fancy.
Okay.
Because there was one meal I had out in LA with some people who were in from Ohio, a bunch of like moron suits from Ohio who went to a restaurant, and they all got branzino and they were very excited about it. And I've done no research into this. I'm sure I'm just projecting my own biases, but these grinning Ohioan idiots who were so stoked that they got a fish with a face on it. I'm like, this is some good marketing. They tricked tourists into thinking branzino is good, and it worked. It worked on these idiots.
Yeah.
But it might be that I just didn't like those guys.
That's true. Branzino is a startling fish to get if you're not, if you don't know what you're actually getting, you're just like, oh, I'll get the fish. Like, yeah. It'll come out like halibut. It'll come out like salmon. And then you get a Branzino. You get, a lot of times they're like audible gas from people because they're like, but that's a whole fish.
Right. And maybe that's also part of why I don't like it, because it's such a showy, attention-y thing. It's like, look at me. I got the whole fish with the face on it.
Yeah. And guaranteed it's not coming out to you. My
thing is different than your thing. I'm like, all right, buddy.
Somebody else is across from you is going to get a normal meal on a plate.
Yeah.
And for whatever fucking reason, yours is coming out on a cutting board.
Yeah.
And like you have whole lemons with it. They've been put in a fire for some reason.
Yeah.
And it's your job to cut those open and put it on the fish.
Right. Like, my meal is on my short rib pasta is on a normal plate. But one of my favorite things about it is I don't have to eat around a face. I just, everything in front of me is mine. I just get to eat it.
But I guess I should sort of understand that it's all about marketing, and it's about like what the restaurant is and the atmosphere of the restaurant that determines pricing and like what constitutes a fancy meal and what doesn't. But I was just like blown away by how kind of mediocre this was. And I was primed poorly because as soon as I got there, they had a bunch of really great cocktails on this menu. And I was like, this looks great.
Yeah.
And I got my first one and it was the smallest drink I've ever been handed in earnest. It was like a thimble full of alcohol.
Yeah.
Like somebody had spent maybe 15 minutes in the back concocting the best few drops. And I drank it. I was like, yeah, I mean, it's fine. This is going to be wasted on me. I won't be able to taste all of the profiles that you're intending me to taste because I don't get it. Also, there's just like some, I want to say sage floating in it. Something that shouldn't be there. And I'm just like, what are we doing?
Like, yeah. I do
this
think
this isn't fun
without passing judgment. I do think your reaction to it says a lot about who you are. And that's the thing I'm not saying, like, I don't think one reaction is better or worse, but I think you're going to go into a restaurant and truffles have been sold to you as this exotic, rare, expensive thing in a fancy place. And that is going to set your expectations a certain way that the thing just can't meet. And there are other people who have the same context to them, but they're going to orgasm face when they get it because the context worked for them. And it doesn't, it sounds like it doesn't work for you. And it doesn't work for me either. I think years ago in my whiskey drinking days, I worked myself up to a state to get Johnny Walker Blue at a bar, which came $30 a shot. And I was like, I want this because I like Johnny Walker Red, the affordable version of the scotch. And I hear great things about this somewhere between $190 and $300 bottle of scotch. I'm like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to spend $30 on one drink for me and I'm going to get it. And I did it. I handed in the money and I took the drink and I sipped it and I was like, not fucking worth it. There was nothing that it could have tasted like for me to like it at that point.
It has to be something so unique and exclusive that you would never experience something like that on your tongue in your life for it to feel like.
Yeah, I would need to drink it and then like someone come up behind me and whisper like, hey, there's a 15th color that nobody else can see. I'm going to tell you how to see it right now. I was like, oh, great. Cool.
Not worth it.
I get it. $30 you say? What a steal.
Yeah, I think that you equating it to alcohol makes a lot of sense. Where especially like wines, where somebody's like, I've gone out to work dinners too, where people are like, we're going to get a really nice wine and it will come to the table and they'll be like, do you want some? And my instinct is to just be like, no, I fucking hate wine. Don't give it to me. but everybody else is drinking it. And I'm like, well, yeah, let's see what it's all about. Let's see what really nice wine is. And drinking it and being like, I can't tell anyone here that I think this tastes like shit.
Yeah.
I can't tell that this is.
I wonder genuinely if it's, what is more rude if someone brings out a bottle of wine they're excited about that they've been saving? Is it ruder to say, no, thank you. It'll be wasted on me. I don't want that because I hate wine and I won't taste whatever you want me to have on it. Like, is it rude to make sure the wine goes to someone who will like it more? Or is it rude to deprive your host of the special
the
thing
joy
they wanted
of seeing
to do?
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, that is tough because, if other people genuinely do enjoy it, then they should have it.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to take it, and I'm going to do the thing where I hold the bottom of the glass and I sort of I spin it. Yeah. Spin it like a toilet that's flushing, like, and then I look at the sides, because I learned you're supposed to do that, and you could see like the drips coming down the side. I don't know what those mean,
but the legs. Like, yeah,
I'll say tannins. I'll say a word like that, and then I'll smell it. You put your whole nose in the glass, and then I'll take a sip, and I'll be like, that's wine, all right.
That's cool. What I like to do is I like to fit my entire mouth around the whole opening of the glass and just sort of into it for a while and let my breath bounce off the wine and then come back to me with whatever it's taken from the wine.
Yes.
To go
your
inside me
breath.
As air. Yeah. So I can like hear and taste it. And like, if I close my eyes with my mouth firmly wrapped around the glass, just by breathing into it, I know where the wine is. Cha-ching! That's right. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify instantly lets you accept all major payment methods, which is great. And Shopify is more than a store. Use it to connect with your customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. Shopify believes in liberating commerce for all, because entrepreneurship has the power to drive communities forward, and commerce can be a force for good. Supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and your success. For a free 14-day trial, go to shopify.com/QQ, all lowercase, baby. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving you the resources once reserved for big business, customized for you with a great-looking online store that brings your idea to life and tools to manage and drive sales. Making your idea real opens endless possibilities. Take it from me, this podcast started as just a phone call between two buddies, and now it's a business. We have cards that say quick question on them, and we use them at restaurants. I love it. I love how Shopify makes it easy for anyone to successfully run their own business. Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. Rhyming, baby. And every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their first sale on Shopify. Get started by building and customizing your online store with no coding or design experience. Access powerful tools to help you find customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. Gain knowledge and confidence and resources to help you succeed. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. It's more than a store. Shopify grows with you. This is a possibility powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/QQ, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/QQ right now.
The only thing that made me want to actually drink wine was watching French Kiss, honestly. Him describing...
beautiful.
Him describing wines. Kevin Kline describing wines is like, no, they pick up whatever they're grown in. I was like, oh, okay. If I could learn to identify that, I would really enjoy that. It feels like I'm solving some sort of CSI mystery, like that there's forensics in my wines where I'm like, ah, do I detect a note of B?
Yeah.
It's like, yes, there was a hive nearby. Like, I want to be able to do that, but that's only because I want a superpower. And it sounds like maybe wine could give that to me, but the drinking of it itself, I'm so bad at it. I don't know the difference between a good wine and a bad wine, and I don't care to learn.
Yeah.
And it turns out with food, I don't know the difference between good food and bad food, and I don't care to learn. It should be obvious to everyone right now by my love of fast food. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But they're like, there are foods that I like and foods that I don't like. And I don't think I have like necessarily the diet or palate of a child, but I also don't think everybody who's considers themselves to have a sophisticated palate and they're eating specific cheeses and things and being like, this is the one, these little crystals are the best part of the cheese. Yeah. I don't think they always know what the fuck they're talking about either.
I'm worried I'm cooking myself into a corner because I cook all the time and I'm always just cooking for myself, and everything I make, I love. It's the best. And that's not to brag on myself as a chef. I just know exactly what I like, the exact amount of spice that I like. And I just cook that for me all the time. And I've noticed that the few times that I'm cooking for other people, I panic a little bit because I try to adjust the recipe to be closer to whatever original recipe I saw written down somewhere that I've customized and perfected. I try to strip out all of my English on it and just do what I think the broadest amount of people will like. And I don't think it ends up being good. And I don't know if I should just trust my gut and make the thing that is exactly what I want, because the fear is I'll serve it to someone else and they'll be like, it's so fucking spicy. And I'm like, yeah, I like spice. I don't shut up. Who cares? This is, it's supposed to be spicy because the chef really likes it.
There's a metaphor for writing in there, Dan.
Oh.
Who are you trying to please?
An American Dad sized audience.
Oh no, that's the broadest stroke. But I could give you some tips. I'm really good at broad. yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm the right audience. I think that kind of food is wasted on me. Oh, but with the exception of, like, I have gone to one or two really nice restaurants, eaten there. Like Republique is another one in Los Angeles where I'm like, I've eaten stuff there where I was like, whoa, this is so good. This is like the best version of this I've ever had in my life. And I can tangibly get it. Like, I get why this should be so expensive. I get why they included the ingredients that they did. And then other places that are very, very fancy where I'm like, I mean, come on, man, this is a quesadilla. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
I could make this.
Another question on this show, quick question that I have to assume was successfully answered.
I guess so.
Hey, buddy, quick question.
Go ahead.
I guess this isn't a quick question. I have a California mystery.
And oh, that's the best kind of question. That's a question. That counts because you don't know the answer.
Yes. And it's a, I've tried to solve this mystery by Googling, and I don't think I have the right combination of words, and I don't know if I ever will. And I'm coming to you because you are the person who knows things. Very specific, random things. There are so many times in my life where I've just like had an idle thought. Like I was in the bathroom at work and they had these strange things above the urinals, just these like metal knobs sticking out. And I was like, yeah, I ever wonder what those knobs are for? And you knew what they were. It was like some kind of holdover from like plumber's union. What was it?
First of all, I just want to take a minute to say that this episode is making me fly. You complimented me left and right in all the right ways, like things I'm most proud of. This is really great. Those things are left. Yeah. The plumber's union, when the plumbers came through to install new urinals in buildings,
that didn't flush anymore.
Yeah, they're going to install some flushless urinals, so and like waterless urinals, and I can like tell you how they work and stuff, that they don't use water, but they still wanted to install the pipes that would go up to bring water to the urinal, because that's part of like the union, like they're going to make money on every single one of those pipes that they bring up to bring water to it. And the union successfully lobbied to make sure that you still had to have water going to those, even if you weren't going to use the water. So each one of those caps that you see above a waterless urinal is because of like union politics, where they got to install instead of just a sewer line going away from the toilet, also a water line going to it.
This is the kind of thing that Soren excels at. He just knows stuff that you see in everyday life that you take for granted. And I'm hoping you have the answer to this. So last time I was in California, I did a solo hike. We'll get to where in a bit. And it was like one of those, like a lot of LA, like dry desert canyony hikes, very exposed. And I went down this big road, and on the left side of the road, you can park and you can go up to this canyon, to this peak, and you can do some hiking up, go a mile and a half up. It's fun. On the other side of the road, there is a lookout spot, just a carved chunk of land where you can go and look out into the canyon below. I parked and went up left and went up this thing, got to the top, took a bunch of pictures, went back down. As I'm going down back and forth on this thing, I hear a lot of noise coming from down below. And it's in Spanish, and I hadn't started taking Spanish yet, so I knew even less than the nothing that I know now about Spanish, but I just identified it as that language. And it was unbroken streams of Spanish. So it wasn't a conversation. I clocked it as either a prayer or a chant. And I didn't know what I was going to be seeing when I got down to the bottom of this canyon. As I got lower and lower, I saw that there were people in that lookout section across the way. And I just heard lots of voices carrying. And I decided once I got to the bottom, I'm going to investigate. I started to cross the street, and there were three women on their hands and knees, one facing one direction, one facing the other direction, one facing straight out into the canyon. So like forming basically a T right over the canyon, and then to the right of her, to the left of her, on their hands and knees, all of them chanting or praying and bawling. And there was one woman in the middle of all of them holding a baby and just sort of like walking around with her baby. And I heard there was a similar lookout section, maybe 50 to 100 yards down the road. And I heard a similar group of men chanting or praying, just unbroken stream of words happening. And I was like, oh, all right, I've stumbled on something religious or personal or important, and this is not for me to be here. So I got in my car and I left. A day later, I went out to dinner with a friend of ours, Garine, that we used to work with, and I was telling her this story of this random wild thing that I couldn't figure out. And she said, it's so funny that you mentioned that. I grew up around Tahunga or Tujunga?
Tahunga.
She grew up around there, and she and her friends...
That was the thing, yeah. Right? The mystery? Yeah.
She and her friends used to drive through Tahunga Canyon if there was like a clear night and they thought there were going to be meteors. Like any times that you wanted to see like big sky in California, she and her friends would go up there at night and look at the stars. And twice they had heard this thing that I'm describing. It was dark when they did it. They were, because obviously they were there at night to see the stars. And so they would get to the same exact spot that I went to, Condor Peak, in this canyon. And they got out of their car and they heard chanting or praying. And because it's pitch black, they don't know what the fuck is going on. They just hear a bunch of voices and they're like, all right, let's get out of here. They thought witchcraft of some kind. They got in their car and left. Twice this happened, and it happened to them at night. And it happened to me at 10:30 in the morning on a Thursday. These groups of people coming to this spot, and I haven't been able to figure out what it is. I feel like I've used the wrong words when I'm Googling. I'm trying every combination of Tujunga, chanting, praying, Spanish, crying, and I haven't found anything that is like, oh, it's this. It's part of this very specific ritual. The closest thing was people practicing Santeria, but that didn't seem like what was happening there, because there in that area, Santeria rituals take place, but there's like remnants of that. There's like plastic bags full of clothes and bones around, and people aren't as like loud and public about it as these men and women crying and chanting were, because it's not the most popular practice in the world, Santeria. Do you know what this is?
I have no idea.
Oh!
What it is. I want to know more about it, though. Are they all chanting the same thing?
No.
Or are they? It's a bunch of people just speaking at once.
And some of them, like, fully bawling.
Fully crying, facing different directions. Mm-hmm. Some of the ones are on their knees. And when they're on their knees, are they?
They're not kneeling with their with their hands crossed. They're not like in prayer. It's hands and knees on the ground, head down, chanting, crying.
And crying.
No one is singing. There's nothing like musical about it. It didn't seem like they were doing a call and response with each other. It was just all happening simultaneously. Men in one section, women in another section, baby in the middle. I don't know if the baby in the middle was part of it. And this is the kind of thing that like I would like our listeners to, if they have the answer, let us know. But I have to be very, very clear about the importance of if they have the answer, because what I
I don't want
what
guesses.
I don't want the swiftest way to a block is maybe it's this. That's your fucking one way ticket to Band City. Because I will read it, and if it's speculation, I will be so mad.
Man, that is a tough one. I don't have any idea what that is. I'm very fascinated by it now, though. And so how many women?
Three. And one in the middle holding the baby.
And she, okay, and they're the only ones there?
Yes.
There aren't, like, people surrounding them?
No. And then the men... So in the parking lot across the street, there were two women who were standing in the parking lot watching them, and they were older women, and they were in the shade, and that's why I thought they were there.
And how? What age?
30s, 40s.
Oh, my God. What is going on?
Okay. I sent a picture in the podcast chat. Do you see it? That's just a picture of the hike that I'm talking about. You can see where the cars are, and then that little patch of dirt across the street. Yeah. That's where they were.
That's very easy. That's exactly what I pictured. Yeah. That's fine. And they're over in that patch, and they're facing in different directions, but only three, not even four.
Four if you count the woman in the middle. But not four in terms of, like, there's not, like, a north, south, east, west. No.
Right. That's... I am, and even if it was, I wasn't going to be like, yeah, then I know what it is. So the closest thing that I can approximate to is, like, when we were in Peru, when you get to the top of a pass or, like, a peak, there was a prayer that you would do there. And it involved, like, there was some accoutrement along with it. Like, you'd have coca leaves for it, and you'd have different things that came along with it, and you could do it very loudly. But this is not the top of something. This is somewhere you can just drive and park.
Correct.
And are they dressed for hiking, or are they, like...
I would say street clothes. They're not dressed for hiking or ceremony.
They just came up to cry there.
And in three directions. If it's helpful to anyone, I want to say this is... December 3rd, December 2nd, or December 3rd. So if there's any kind of holiday to tie it to, but then if there's a holiday, then Gadiné was seeing the same thing a couple times throughout the year and at night.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea what that is, Dan. I'm so sorry.
Isn't it an exciting mystery?
It is. I really am tantalized. I'm going to start researching after the podcast is over, because I really want to know.
Here's a fun difference between the two of us is you're going to research this because you want to solve the mystery, but for me, the fact that you don't know it means that the mystery is solved. Means that's it. then we're never going to know it.
I used to be an actor back in the day, and I did a movie called Blind Ambition, and part of it was shot up in Griffith Park at night, and you have to go up there with a forest ranger. A forest ranger has to be on set the whole time, and we're shooting in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. and I can see the forest ranger. There's a lot of time when you're on set where you're just like sitting around, for anyone who hasn't done that before, where you're just like chilling. And so I'm watching the forest ranger kind of walk the perimeter of our shoot. And she kind of walks, she's doing these kind of zigzags out in the woods. And then she stops, comes back in, grabs a trash bag and goes back out and puts something in a trash bag and comes back and takes it to like a bear dumpster and puts it in. And I was like, what was that? And she was like, it's a goat's head.
That's like, Santeria.
Fucking what? Yeah, that's why I'm bringing it up. So I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, it happens a lot up here. Like, we'll find dead chickens or mutilated chickens, and we find mutilated goats and entrails and things like that up here. And we encourage people not to do it, but, you know, they're going to do it if they're going to do it. And so... we just clean up after them, and we just move on so that other people don't find it.
Yeah.
But she had just found a goat's head, and she was like, oh, not another one.
Right.
And for me, I was like, we're all going to die up here. that's the first thing that happens in a horror movie is you find the animals dead. but yeah, so you're right. There's a lot more, there's a lot more props.
Yeah. I think in all of my Googling about this, I found the Santeria stuff, because there are a bunch of articles about like, yeah, if you find a plastic bag with some like scraps of clothing and some bones in it, it happens. That's just, don't freak out. It's not a murder. It's Santeria. And the same thing as you're saying, like, we try to discourage it, but yeah, it's going to happen. I found those articles, and one person, I'm trying to see if I could track down the link right now. One person on Reddit who basically described exactly what I described to you and was asking Reddit writ large, does anyone know what this is? And no one knew.
Yeah. Gabe, our engineer, is pretty confident that it's Santeria.
Okay.
You might have found this too, Daniel, but I did a little Google and I came across a Facebook thread and it was an article that someone posted about a shallow grave found in the Angeles Forest around where you were, used for animal sacrifices. And then there was a string of comments, probably about 10 comments on this thread of people saying, yeah, I go up there and I see people chanting, a lot of people wearing white gowns. And then I also found an LA Times article that from like 2002 that's referencing how Los Angeles is the third largest population center in the U.S. for practicers of Santeria.
Wow. Yes, Gabe knew. Gabe solved it.
All right.
And I think that surely there must just be like a light version of a ritual, right? Like where you go up there and you're like, well, it's the middle of the day, but we need to get this over with. And so maybe we'll do away with the gowns and the bags full of stuff.
It's really hot. Can I do it without goat bones, do you think?
That's nice that the baby was involved. Yeah. That's good.
The silence that you're all experiencing right now is me weighing if there's anything I could say right now that could be offensive. And I think it all could be, because I know so little about this practice.
Right.
Almost anything I say will be handling it with flippancy.
Uh-huh.
So, yes. So Soren, get me out of here.
Well, we got a couple options here. We could just move on to another topic.
Okay.
Or we could just end a show.
All right. I think you know my preference.
Well, you can follow Dan on Twitter at @DOBO_Inc. Or you can follow me, Soren, at @Soren_LTD. You can follow Quick Question at @QQ_Soren and Dan. And you can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. You can also find us on our Patreon. You can get some extra fun bonus content. We do little tight episodes for just our Patreon listeners, and that's at patreon.com/quickquestion. And our producer and sound engineer editor, his name is Gabe Harder, and he solved a riddle. He solved a mystery for us today. He answered the quick question we couldn't solve. And honestly, I think this might be the first quick question that had a legitimate real answer to it.
Yeah.
And somebody who wasn't us did it.
Right. And again, I didn't want to speak too much about it because at the end of the day, I don't practice Santeria. I ain't got
Play us out.